Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Greta Johnson, and this is the Nerdette Book Club. It's just like a regular book club, except you gotta bring your own snacks. We are back after a little summer break, and I'm very excited about this month's book club and our discussion buddies. We are talking about Gabrielle Zevin's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. It is about video games and friendship and creativity and grief, and we are talking about it with Jason Concepcion. He's the host of the podcast X-Ray Vision from Crooked Media. We also co-host the official Game of Thrones podcast about House of the Dragon together. Jason, hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. Are you sick of me yet?
No, nowhere close.
All right. Well, we'll see how we are at the end of this conversation. We also have with us author Amber Sparks. Her most recent book is called And I Do Not Forgive You. Amber, welcome.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Oh, thrilled to have you. So we are also going to be hearing from lots of listeners with this one, which I'm very excited about. Here is your spoiler warning. If you have not read this book and you don't want to know what happens, go back and listen to the spoiler-free author interview we have in the feed. If you haven't read the book and you are totally cool with spoilers, welcome. We are glad to have you. A quick plot summary just to kind of get everyone acquainted. This book follows Sam and Sadie. They start off as childhood friends, and they're in Los Angeles, and they become ambitious college students in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and then they become co-founders of a video game company. While their shared love of video games brings them together, their story is also about failure and creativity and disability and the complicated romantic love between friends. Let's start off with a voicemail from a listener. Here is Emily.
I loved the book. I think I devoured it in like 2 days. Here's why I loved it. It gave me just a completely new perspective on gaming and the creativity and artistry that goes into it, from music to graphics to sound to character development and editing. And that part was really, really just fascinating to me. I literally holed up in a hammock for 2 days and finished this book and didn't, basically ignored everyone else around me. And when I finished it, I was like, wow, I have this bias against gamers. Like, oh, they're just holed up in a dark basement, like ignoring the world around them. And there I was sitting in a hammock, ignoring the world around me. So I think it sort of made me realize, like, you know, I read to escape and people game to escape.
I loved that so much. I can kind of relate, though. I don't know. As a person who doesn't play video games, I still understand that they mostly are about story, which I think this book conveys really beautifully, too. Now, I know y'all are both video game nerds.
Yes.
I'm really curious how you thought it worked. Jason, what do you think?
Oh, gosh. I think it really gets at something kind of essential about the way people interact with games, which is the feeling of really deep satisfaction of playing through a world where you're in control, you can leave it whenever you want, that you're accomplishing things, you understand the rules. There's a lot of talk about the rules and the fairness of the rules and how life in this book, Sam talks about this and thinks about this, how the rules of life are essentially unfair, but in the game you can create fair rules. That's a part of what is so appealing. It's a world that you can understand. And when you find the loopholes in it, those are free and accessible for anyone to use.
That's so interesting. So Amber, you also are a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
How did it reach? I mean, partly I thought I loved it so much because this is one of those books that felt to me sort of like it is about video games, but it also isn't at all about video games.
Yeah.
In some, you know, how did it work for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I felt the same way. I think, you know, it was, It was interesting on two levels, because on one level, you know, I just identified so much with the book, because and particularly with Sadie, because the characters are all right around my age. And so their entire evolution of gaming, as particularly Sadie's, was very similar to the games that I played and the games that I enjoyed. And, you know, King's Quest was also the first game, you know, that I played that had a female protagonist. And so there was a lot of stuff that I just on that level, I was like, you know, just like, yes, when I was reading this, you know, but also I really loved, there's this line that I actually wrote down from the book because I loved it so much, where, you know, I think Sam is talking about how video games provide the expectation that the world could shift at any time. And I love that because that's, to me, that's the thing that's really exciting, not just about playing games, is sort of having all of these different perspectives and being able, suddenly, you know, the world changes completely. You go down a pipe and you're in an ice world or an underwater world, you know, and then suddenly you have to figure out the solution to that and what to do with it. But I think also, you know, it was interesting to me as a reader, because I feel like I can tell when I read a book if the person who's writing the book plays video games or not.
Totally.
There is something that I think when you grow up playing games, that there is, we write a book and in a way it almost is structured in a lot of ways like a game. And you do sort of throw these paradigm shifts in, and to see kind of how your reader will deal with them in a way that's kind of fun and, you know, gamifying it, I guess.
I loved how much the structure shifted with every game. I didn't think it worked in every single instance, but I thought it was such a cool, like, narrative trick. And I definitely want to talk about it. But first, let's listen to this voicemail from Ashley in Illinois.
I do play video games, and I felt it was very obvious that the author appreciates video games as an art form and also appreciates what they can do for people and how powerful they can be. I loved the idea of playing with someone being intimate. When you're playing with someone, you are vulnerable. They're going to see you struggle and lose and get frustrated, but they're also going to see you persevere and win. You get to see so many sides of a person when you're playing together. I liked the chapters that were written in the style of the games, where the two sides chapter had both Sam and Sadie's perspectives of the same time period, and the Pioneers chapter being the in-game interactions. I loved it. I don't know what rating system we're using, but I give it 10 out of 10 Donkey Kong arcades.
I just thought those were great insights to the idea of sort of like the intimacy of play. What did you think about the structure of this book, though? I think the Pioneers one was the one that worked the least well for me. I don't know if it was partly just because I knew we were getting close to the end and it was like, I just needed to know what happened. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I mean, either way, it seemed like such a cool artistic stretch as an author to get to play in those worlds. And to your point, Amber, I think it really is testament to how clear it is that Gabrielle loves gaming, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I have a clear preference when I write and when I read. I love intricate, interesting structures. I think it's fun as a reader, and I also just love writing this. So I was just thinking as I was reading this, how much fun she probably was having writing this book. I agree. I was the Pioneers, I think, worked the least for me. And it was like fun. Like once I'd read it and I realized what was going on at the end, then I was like, oh, and I went back and I read it again and it was a lot more fun. But I think when I read it the first time, I was like in the same place you are, where I was like, oh, I really need to know what's going to happen to these characters that I care so much about. And now I'm in this game and I'm, you know, not sure what's happening, and it's all very, you know, sort of slow and pioneery and Oregon
Trail-y. There's like a sparseness to it that totally tracks, but it was also like, oh god, this is kind of a slog.
Yeah
That's really funny. I'm also delighted to hear that you imagined that she had fun writing it, because I did too, and I actually asked her about that and she was like, to be clear, this is not fun. And I was like, okay, I appreciate that distinction. And she kind of described it as, forget the exact phrasing that she used, but it's sort of like very intense concentration. She even compared it to sort of like Michael Jordan playing or something, which is like, okay, fair. Like, yeah, you're like, I understand that you are also working your ass off, yeah. But it does, I don't know. I think it, you know, comes back to that, just that idea of like what a celebration of play this mm-hmm. book ends up being.
I like that structure as well. And for me, it really got its hooks into me in the Both Sides mm-hmm. segment, where it was where you're following Sam and Sadie almost as from a first person perspective, that really let you understand and feel like the heartbreak of their kind of like emotional separation that was presaging mm-hmm. what was to come. Mm-hmm. And it felt very true to, you know, I think anybody that's ever tried to create something with a team mm-hmm. who have been unified in that yeah. mission has felt like, I'm not being taken seriously. My ideas aren't being taken. This person is hogging up all the limelight. Am I hogging mm-hmm. up all the limelight? Is this fair? And those thoughts have a way of just curdling and turning poisonous over time. And you could really mm-hmm. feel it in that chapter. And I agree with you. You know, like, we're going to agree on a lot of stuff, I think. Pioneers. But, you know, by the time you get to Pioneers, you're like, okay, just I need to know.
You know?
I got to know.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to
like,
know.
How does it?
Got to yes. know what's happening.
And, of course, yeah. like, yeah. the effort of building a whole ass game to reach out is beautiful. But it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to another voicemail. Here is Sally.
I'm known amongst my friends for being a super fast reader, but when I read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, I lingered on the prose of Gabrielle Zevin. The book is absolutely mesmerizing. It takes you over decades in the lives of Sam and Sadie, who sound like they should be a vaudevillian couple, and they are beautifully drawn characters, along with characters that aren't quite main characters, like Marks and their families. And to say that I loved this book is an understatement. It was just a tour de force, and I'm someone who does not like gaming or really know anything about gaming, but it's just an epic novel.
I'm curious for both of you if there was a moment where you knew you were all in on it, because for me, it did take me a little longer than I thought it might, and it was when she described that game, The Solution, and that's when I was like, oh, shit. What about y'all? Jason, was there like a specific moment?
Yeah, I think it was when we started to learn about their influences. And, you know, the way that Zevin describes the experience of playing Metal Gear and other games, I really felt deeply that kind of idea of this need to make something. I'm going to make something mm-hmm. great. What is that like? Yeah. You know, and understanding where that came from for these characters is what really hooked me in the story.
Mm. I think, too, that excitement of meeting someone who you want to make something with, you know?
Yeah.
That's just really exciting. Amber, what about you? Was there a specific moment?
You know, actually, it was probably the Solution moment for me as well, because
right?
like, I think also, you know, as soon as I read like the Emily Blaster game, I was like, okay, that's yeah. awesome. I love that. But
which is a game, by the way, did you know that?
I did not.
They made it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's
it
amazing.
Was like part of their publicity push.
Oh
they made
God.
It's very difficult.
I have to play it. But I loved Solution because I was thinking, you know, it made me realize how deep, not the research, but the love that for games that the mm-hmm. author had, and just this, and the love for this sort of idea of creation. And you know, there's this game called Papers, Please, which is sort of this famous game.
I love that game.
Yes. And it's Solution totally reminded me of Papers, Please. And I was just yeah. thinking about, you know, I bet that's, you know, was part of the influence here. And also at the same time, I thought, you know, there's something about being very young and making something like that. You know, I did something very similar to Solution when I was a theater major in college.
Huh.
But with a warehouse and a sort of, you know, it was ill-advised, to say the least. And
I have so many questions.
And people complained about it in a very similar way, actually. And I was instantly like, oh my God, this person like gets, you know, sort of the evolution of thinking and the excitement of creation and also that excitement of like provoking something and trying
yeah.
to provoke people a little bit too. And then I was like, okay, I'm in.
I loved the mention of Papers, Please. So in that game, you are like a government official in a fascist country.
Oh, wow.
Who has to who has to process the paperwork of various people who are trying to immigrate or move around the country. And something about the way the game asks you to stamp these papers, you know, yes or no, it's a pretty simple mechanic.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Something about the way that you are stamping these things and understanding that a character that comes before you, it like maybe desperately needs to leave the country.
Right.
It makes you complicit in this system.
Mm-hmm.
And it really revealed something to me about the structure of things and the way they shape our lives. Mm-hmm. That was really profound. I think about that game all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because it really, that's the first time I think that the author starts sort of hitting on this theme of what would happen if you had made a different choice, and sort of this idea of like branching narratives and, you know, the things that, you know, that it's a theme that resonates throughout the book, right? With Sam's mom and with all these little choices that everyone makes and how their lives could have been different, you know, the choices that lead to Marx's death or don't. And, and that's, I think, the first time that sort of they start hitting on that.
Yeah, that is really cool. So I really loved what this book says about creativity in a lot of different ways. We sort of just hinted about the idea of criticism and how inevitable it often is. I think also failure, though, plays such a huge role in this book and is just fascinating. I mean, I remember I even talked to Gabrielle about this too, that moment where Sadie goes out to lunch with Dove, and it's like well after their relationship has ended, and I definitely want to unpack that guy because holy shit. but he gives her some really good advice around like, listen, it's okay that this version didn't work out. Like, now you get to take a minute and regroup, and you can figure out the next thing. Like, this is absolutely part of the process. I just thought it was actually kind of a lovely little pep talk from a guy who seemed like kind of a monster.
Yeah, he's complicated, Dove.
I mean, you know, that moment, it always strikes me that failure is absolutely part of the creative process. That's so true.
Yeah.
But it always strikes me that the people who frame it the way Dove frames it are the people who can fail a million times and never feel it. You know, there is something really present when you're in it trying to make a thing, and maybe you haven't made your reputation yet or your bank account or what have you. And you feel like, if I don't bring this thing into the world, I'm finished. I'm done. I don't know what happens next. And it's really hard to hear, oh yeah, failures, yeah, just move on. It's really hard to hear that in that moment. And Dove, I don't know what makes that person tick at all, other than it seems like they move through the world like the way people move through games. They can go here and go there and decide to interact with this relationship or not. And the stakes are very low for a person like Dove.
Everybody's an NPC in their world.
It seems like there's a real entitlement to him that is extremely frustrating to watch. I don't know. It was also kind of fascinating to me that some of the advice he gave wasn't actually terrible, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he's, you know, I think he is a good teacher because he has this sort of purity of thought around the idea of creation and the selfishness that it takes to create something, right? I mean, there is a real selfishness when you are creating something, and particularly, you know, whether it's writing a book or making a game, you know, there's this like focus and that you have to get into, and this world that you have to immerse yourself in 24/7 and kind of shut everyone else and their needs out, which is, you know, he was very good at doing so.
I love that was like so much veiled criticism. It's just, that was perfect, Amber. You did great with that. So speaking of NPCs, we should talk about Marx. That section is gorgeous. I definitely cried. I talked to a friend who at first especially was worried that Marx was too good and too perfect to exist in this book, which I thought was really interesting. In a lot of ways, there is a certain simplicity to him, right? Where he is just like, he just wants to help and is just so full of admiration and love. But I don't know. I don't think I was particularly frustrated by that. Did Marx work for you as a character, Jason?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think that there is something intoxicating about being part of something, being near something. You don't have to be the driving force that is creating whatever the thing is. But just being around it, being in the room sometimes is exciting and fulfilling in a way that's deep and like really, really hard to explain. And I think Marx captured that. That was Marx. He had a perspective that allowed him to see, oh, these two people together, this thing that they're making, here's why it's great. Here's why people will love it. And I want to just help. I want to be there. And I empathize with that. I felt that.
Yeah. I mean, just that last paragraph of that section where, you know, he has the option to play again and he looks over all, like I was flipping through the book today and saw it again and cried again just because it was like, God damn it. Like, this is beautiful.
Yeah. That section was, it was hard to read. I mean, it was great.
Oh my
God. It was beautiful. Yeah. But yeah, I was like, especially when I realized where it was going, I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
I think at some point, I feel like somebody says this about him, that he's just like interested in everything. And I think that people like that, whose driving thing tends to be curiosity, tend to be more generous because they see sort of all these different amazing creative things happening and they just want to be part of that. And I think he was a good sort of, I don't know, foil, I guess, for Dove in a way, because I felt like Dove was very much this sort of like id, you know, selfish figure who was like, you know, you go into yourself and you make this thing happen. And that's what you do. And I think Marx was sort of the opposite of that. He's like, I'm going to, you know, help make things happen, help other people make their things happen.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, we should take a break. But first, let's listen to two more voicemails.
Hey, Nerdette. This is Kara from Colorado. I found it to be such a sweet and poignant picture of what it is to be in relationship with people. I also love that it has now inspired in me a desire to use Oregon Trail humor in my daily life. My coworkers all say, thank you.
I'm John from Cara, North Carolina, and I noticed that Zevin has a penchant for unusual words that had me running to the dictionary, or at least my phone's assistant. Tautology, palimpsest, and my favorite, don't know if I'm even pronouncing this right, hirsute.
Oh, all such great vocab words. More on Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow in just a minute.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's listen to another voicemail. Here is Liz in Minnesota.
Very, very excited that you picked Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. One of my favorite books I've read so far this year. And yes, I say the full title every single time. So I always call it Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I figure if Gabrielle Zevin was going to name it that, then that's what I should call it. Also, in this book, I really appreciated the smaller Jewish representation in it. And by smaller, it's not that it was small Jewish representation. It's simply the fact that it was not a big deal about it, right? Like the way that you see so many characters written about, like, you know, quick comment about Christmas, whatever. You definitely knew that there were Jewish characters in this book without it being a book about Judaism. And I just always really appreciate that.
Yeah, from a similar kind of point of view, the depiction of Asian Americanness. Everything felt very, very lived in a way that I appreciated. It felt like real life, what it feels like to be maybe between a couple of worlds. I really resonated with me.
Yeah, I feel like she does that in a lot of different ways. And I could see Jason, especially, you know, given the fact that both Sam and Marx are Asian American, but like have such different experiences with that and what that means too. Like it just seemed like it was, you know, it's like, oh, there's a variety of experiences from which we can, you know, like be inspired. I thought it was really cool.
It totally. There's a moment where Mark's wonders, why am I, there's a play going on, he's trying to get cast in, and he's like, yes. Why am I a Laertes and not a Hamlet? And then someone has to explain to him, it's because you're Asian. And he's both upset, but also happy that someone told him like what the deal was. And that just felt very true to life to me.
Oh, God. We got a voicemail from Allie in Mississippi who wanted to talk about the relationship between Sam and Sadie, which I thought was really lovely. Let's take a listen.
I actually managed to finish a book club pick in time to call in. So here I am. I loved, loved, loved this book. It's so clever and well-paced, and I adored the homage to Stardew Valley. On a more personal note, I'm asexual, and I just loved the way this book explores non-romantic or non-sexual relationships. None of the characters are explicitly ace, but it felt in that spirit of celebrating all kinds of different relationships. There's a really lovely moment when Marks and Sadie visit Sam in the hospital, and the narrative kind of beautifully pans out to the nurse trying to decide how these three people are related. And she concludes that none of them are romantically involved, but she lets them stay past visiting hours. And that moment just really meant everything to me, as did a lot of the attempts to think through the limits of language like friendship and love. I've thought a lot about what kinds of relationships I'm seeking in my life and how to find ones that are fulfilling. And the way this book offers up creative partnership as a complicated but rewarding option really moved me. I now wonder if I'm not a Sam in search of a Sadie or a Sadie in search of a Sam, and have realized that maybe all of us need a Marks in our lives.
I loved that so much. I am really fascinated to hear from each of you how you felt about the ending. Because, I mean, there is a version of this book that ends with the two of them being together. And it's a different book.
Yeah.
Are you happy with how it ended, Amber?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel like I would have been, I would not have wanted a version where they ended up together. It would have been like artificial. Yeah. It was interesting because I liked the way that their relationship was platonic. And there's a couple of points, one particular, I think, but there's a couple of points where they talk about how what we have is better than romantic love. Like, I love you more than I would love a lover, you know? And it's something deeper. And I think, and it's interesting because I think that in some ways for me contrasted really nicely with the simplicity of the Marks character, where I felt like things were simpler for him. You know, he knew what he wanted and he had, you know, this sort of abiding curiosity. And Sam is a very complex person. And I felt like, you know, for him and to have a relationship with him, it didn't need to necessarily include sex because it just wasn't that simple. And it would have been even more complicated in their already sort of complicated relationship.
Mm-hmm. It would have been pretty annoying, I think, if they ended up together.
Especially as pioneers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what does Sadie say? I think it's, you know, love is common. True collaborators in this life are rare, or something to that extent. Yes. And I really felt that. And I feel, you know, I think the way I read it was the initial meeting in Boston. That felt like there might be some longing there, a little bit of something.
Yeah.
But very quickly, that changes to their relationship, their collaborative relationship, their collaborative partnership, and the depth of that. And I think you could feel Sam at times weighing, talking about the full extent of his feelings, but also understanding that it's not, that's the potential chaos that could unleash is not worth what they currently have. And I think that felt very, very relatable. Man, it would have felt really cheapened if they got together romantically at the end of this.
Yeah,
I think so too. It's funny because that also reminds me of a quote that love is a constant and a variable, which is also just a really gorgeous concept, I think, around how much relationships can and will change over time and how that can be really painful and beautiful too, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I think we should go back to the NPC section for a moment because we got two voicemails that both felt really strongly about that. We'll hear first from Kali in Pennsylvania and then from Rachel in Indianapolis.
I have tons of opinions and thoughts on all the different things going on in that book, but there's just not enough time in this message to do a deep dive. So the one thing I do want to bring up is the NPC chapter. I thought it was one of the most beautifully written chapters in the book, and just the way that it handled such a tragic event. Oh, I was kind of no good after I read that chapter. It was so devastating, but so beautiful.
Hi, Nerdette. It's Rachel from Indianapolis. I loved it so much. The one thing I really want to call out, though, is the NPC chapter. I was blown away by how just that transition happened, because I feel like so often, and I actually even thought this when Mark's, he's probably going to die. And I was like, here we go. Like, we're going to do this kind of thing. And I was like, please don't be predictable. And then it wasn't. It was beautiful. It was interesting. It was unique. It was so crushing, but also just, it was wonderful. Thank you so much. Great pick. Can't wait for next month.
I just loved those both so much. I don't know, though. I mean, one thing we didn't talk about that section, too, is the fact that I think that's the moment where we really see Zevin nod to the darker side of gaming, too. Mm-hmm. And the racism and misogyny and intolerance that can also exist in this world.
Yeah.
Which isn't specific to gaming by any means, but does seem like it can thrive there.
You know, there was like a good period of my life where I stopped playing games. Mm-hmm. And it was actually because, so much of gaming became about sort of first person shooters and people with headsets on saying incredibly misogynistic, racist, homophobic things. And it was like a huge turnoff. And I actually didn't, really discover games again until, like a few years later when I started, playing some of these other open world kind of games again and going, oh, yes, this. It felt unsettling to read in a lot of different ways. And then, of course, once you realize where it was going, it was even more unsettling and tragic.
There's something so intimate and personal about games where it's your own world that it creates this place where I think people just feel like this is my world. I can say whatever I want in here. It just goes into the black void and it doesn't really matter like a game because when I turn it off, it's gone. Yeah. And how dare you tell me what I can do in my own little bubble of reality? And I think that creates a lot of this toxicity. And I think to Amber's point, it's unsettling, and it feels unsettling, like a window into the absolute worst part of the human condition, and it's there and it's screaming in your ear. It was terrible. But I think the other thing that this chapter really exemplifies is the power of these kind of like small kindnesses that are depicted here and just small comments of affirmation and the way those things can really buoy a person's soul. It's a heartbreaking chapter. Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a really interesting, I was thinking about this as I was reading it because, my mom died a few years ago and
I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you. And I was playing just recently, I started playing this game called Hindsight that just came out on the Switch. And it's like a, sort of a story game. And it's this, narrator who goes, the protagonist who goes to her mom's house after her mom has died and is like cleaning out her house. And there's like all this stuff that's memories that are surfacing. And it's actually very clever the way that it's done. She like uses sort of mirrored surfaces to go deeper into this world. But I was thinking about that as I was reading this chapter, actually, and thinking about how games in and of themselves can be so cathartic. And the idea of sort of entering these other worlds and how, Mark sort of does that. And there is this sort of almost this idea of an afterlife, right? But in the game world. And that was incredibly beautiful to me, I thought.
That's gorgeous. Are there any other games you might recommend for someone who really enjoyed this book, Amber?
There's there's a million. It's, a very depressing game, but What Remains of Edith Finch.
Ooh, yeah.
Has this sort of similar way of sort of dealing with grief
and death and sort of what could be or what could have been, and is a really interesting game. Again, very dark. There's also a game called Spiritfarer that I was playing recently. It's actually funny because my daughter was playing it, and it's like you have to, your death, and you have to like ferry all these people after they've died across to like the, you know, world beyond or whatever. And you have to like do all these little kindnesses for them to make them happy. So like bring them food and give them nice things to look at and do.
Huh. That's awesome. What do you think, Jason?
Oh, those are all wonderful recommendations. I would add Firewatch, which is a game that came out maybe 5 years ago. It has one of the most bracing tutorial levels. It's, you know, it opens with this kind of cold open that teaches you how to play the game that is very affecting at dropping you into the mind of this character that you're going to play, who then goes off and works as a fire watcher, one of the people in a tower who makes sure that the wildfires aren't breaking out and informs when they are breaking out. And he strikes up a platonic, semi-romantic, emotional relationship with another person in a tower, and they it is affecting in a way that is just really deep.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Writing that down too.
I love that. I would also love to hear if y'all have other book recommendations for something that, you know, if somebody read this one and they liked, that they should check out. The one that came to my mind, which is very different but similar in some ways, is How High We Go in the Dark by Sequoia Nagamatsu.
Oh, yeah.
Last year. And I don't know what it is about. I mean, they're a collection of short stories that are all intertwined. I think that must be it, is that there's sort of a game element to figuring out how all of these different characters are connected and what's happening. It's an amazing book because it's quite short, but he accomplishes so much, I think, especially also around the power of story.
Yeah.
Which is also obviously super resonant with this one. You read it, Amber?
Yeah, it was a fantastic book. Good. I think that's interesting too, because it makes me think about NPCs, because there's people that you're like, I don't really know. This person's kind of got a small role, and I don't really know what their deal is, and you know, maybe in the next story, it's a bigger role, and yeah, it's really cool that way.
Oh, it's so good.
I thought of Charles Yu's How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe.
Cool.
I mean, he's also Interior Chinatown. I mean, really just because he does such a good job of like sort of like this play, this idea of play in his books and stories. But yeah, that one, for some reason, I think probably partially because it does deal with grief and it does deal with loss. And it does deal with sort of this idea that if you could just change one thing, that, you know, you could change everything somehow.
Awesome. I'm excited to check that one out. Jason, what do you think?
You know, I think it's something about the kind of the narrative structure of these kind of like seemingly loosely linked chapters that made me think of A Visit from the Goon Squad, some years old now, by Jennifer Egan.
Classic.
But affected me in much the same way, where a lot of the punch is discovering what the connection is as you kind of go deeper into the chapter.
Oh my God. And that PowerPoint, I think about that thing all the time.
All the time. That is very gamey, very interactive. And that book just knocked me out.
Okay. So we are going to do a completely arbitrary rating system for this book. For this one, I think we should do Tomorrow's, which means absolutely nothing.
Okay.
But obviously the book is starting with three tomorrows. I mean, I guess we could go to infinite tomorrows. Obviously, we didn't think about this very much. Amber, how many tomorrows would you give this book?
all the tomorrows. That seems reasonable.
That's beautiful. So forever is what you're saying.
Exactly. Forever.
All the tomorrows. I love it. Jason, what do you think?
I'm going to go to a standard 4/5 structure, and I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 tomorrows.
I respect the rules that you have imposed on the tomorrow system. I think that's entirely reasonable. Well, oh my gosh, Jason, Amber, thank you both so much for coming on and talking with me about this gorgeous book. It was very fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is great.
Thank you. that's it for Book Club this month. Thanks to all of you who read along with us. And of course, extra special bonus thanks to all of you who called in with your thoughts. Rachel, Liz, Kara, John, Emily, Collie, Allie, Ashley, and Sally. Y'all are the best. Thank you so much. Our October Book Club selection is Celeste Ng's Our Missing Hearts. This just happens to come out on the first Tuesday of the month, which also just happens to be the day that you can hear a spoiler-free conversation with Celeste Ng that comes out on October 4th. The show is produced by me and Anna Bauman. Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer, and Maggie Civet builds our newsletter every week. We will see you on Friday.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.